I'm speaking today with Liam Cooper, staff lawyer at the Prince George Indigenous Justice Center. Liam, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Kate. Thanks for having me.
So to start off, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became involved with the Indigenous Justice Center?
Oh, yes, I'd be happy to. So I've been a lawyer since 2015. I've lived in Prince George for about 10 years now. And I first got in contact with the Justice Center when a colleague of mine was actually helping to open the centers and do some hiring. And she encouraged me to consider making an application. So I've been working with them since June of 2020.
I believe the center opened in September of last year. Is that correct?
It opened, I believe, formally in February of 2020, and I'm sure it's no news to anybody, but it was a kind of exceptional year with the COVID situation, and that certainly did change some of our plans for how we were going to operate and sort of communicate with the community. But yes, we have been working there since February of 2020 in our location on Fifth Avenue downtown.
Great. And can you tell us a little bit about the work that the center does and the work that you do? What does your day-to-day look like?
Yes, I'd be happy to. So my day-to-day at the center is largely involved with me providing direct representation and providing legal advice to clients directly. Our clients are anyone who is self-identified as Indigenous and who is having a family or criminal justice issue that they're having difficulty getting representation for otherwise. That can sound like a bit of a mouthful, but in practice, what it means is I'm able to help people who have situations before the courts and other services like Legal Aid of BC are not in a position to provide them with representation. So I could give you a couple of examples of some of the things that I'm able to do in my job, which I find really exciting and novel. Sometimes what I can do is help people who have a criminal charge before the courts where there's not a risk of jail time. And in that circumstance, legal aid has a limited ability to provide counsel for a trial. So sometimes if people are facing a charge such as a driving while prohibited and they're looking at the consequence of losing their license, but not like a jail penalty, I'm in a unique position to help people like that to fully exercise their rights before the court and to take cases like that to trial if they want to. I can also give you a couple examples about how that would come up in a family context if you'd like some more information on that as well.
Yeah, that'd be great.
In a family context, legal aid is very well equipped to help people who are having acute family safety or child safety and protection concerns, but there are many other issues that ordinary people and our clients and Indigenous people in the community can have that don't fall into that rubric. And for example, if an Indigenous person is caring for a child, perhaps a child is biologically related to them, or any other child that they've been made the foster parent or otherwise a guardian of, the existing system will certainly protect the rights of the child and will make sure the child is appropriately cared for. But there are many many steps beyond that, particularly in terms of if anyone would want to adopt a child, where the existing system isn't able to help them. And that can have implications, especially important implications for our clients, for Indigenous people in this area, because issues of inheritance of somebody's band status. If you wanted the children that you were caring for as a foster parent to inherit your band status, there is a way to try to explore that through the Family Law Act and what they call a custom adoption. But that's not something that Legal Aid BC has, at least in recent years, been able to assist people with, no matter what their income level. So those are two examples of ways that I find I'm able to provide a different kind of service in a practical sense. But that's really about just about me. And if I can go on a little more, if you to give you more detail about what the center does entirely, there's a whole team around me. I have the assistance of my colleagues in Prince George. We have an outreach worker and an administrative coordinator, and we have the provincial director for diversion and early intervention, who all work out of our Prince George office, and we're all available to help clients, to meet with clients, to put them in touch with elders or other services, to help people if they have maybe a question that they don't know whether they need legal representation for or not. Our goal is always to provide culturally appropriate wraparound services for Indigenous people in Prince George who may feel that they have an issue that they could use a little more help with. So in a day-to-day sense, that can mean a few different things right now. Clearly, when COVID restrictions ease, we'll be in a position to provide storefront walk-in services in a way that is a bit challenging for us now. But I do want to stress that we remain open to the public. We're easy to reach through a phone or by email. All of our information is linked into our website. And if people need help, it's just as simple as calling and leaving us a message, and we're usually able to book somebody in for whatever sort of length of consultation their issue requires with myself. Usually within a week, I my schedule is full, but I have the luxury to be able to focus on this providing the services full time as a staff lawyer, and whereas many other lawyers' practices are complicated by having a variety of different contracts, a variety of different clients, I'm able to make myself fully available, and I am more than happy if sometimes if all people need is for me to help them make a phone call to another agency, for me to sit down and maybe look at an area of law that I haven't necessarily encountered before, or if it's an issue of simply helping people to connect with other services. Sometimes it really is as simple as walking with somebody to go to that government office or to go to the DMV or to go to court in a way where they didn't feel comfortable otherwise. So we really try to put the client's need first, and that is a welcome change in my experience from the what kind of services were available before. I guess if I can keep continuing on, I think one other important example I would mention is that historically it's hard for people to get referral to a lawyer who can really devote the time and stick with them and really help them get to the bottom of an issue until certain things have happened on an administrative level in court. For example, there can be a delay between when a police-involved incident occurs and perhaps sometimes when a person is placed on a police undertaking and when the charge is reviewed by the Crown, the Crown Counsel, and they have to make their own decision about whether they're going to proceed with charges. Now, until that happens, until the Crown decides to proceed charges and assigns the information a court number, it's very difficult for existing services to refer you to a lawyer because the lawyer the contract can't be processed for an individual lawyer through legal aid until they have that number. And in most cases, I should say, because there's always exceptions, and I don't mean to give the impression that other agencies don't make allowances to help people, but we're able to cut through some of the noise and the chatter there and just simply say, what is your concern and how can we help? And I don't need to wait for any other green light or any other sort of process to occur, because the critical thing is for the person who's experiencing that issue, who has the charge or potential charge over their heads, the impacts on their life begin right away. Mm-hmm. And the impacts of any conditions of an undertaking they might be on, any changes that can make to their family situation, their employment, their ability to travel, those circumstances don't wait until the first court date, but before those issues really start to affect people. And so I feel very rewarded in my work. I feel very enfranchised in this new position and this new center to be able to just open my door and to extend my hand to just simply assist people from the moment the situation begins to affect them.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a much more holistic service you're offering or able to offer than perhaps, as you mentioned, the traditional service providers that are currently operating. So in addition to these bureaucratic barriers that you've mentioned, I imagine cost is often a barrier to accessing representation or some of these services. What's the pay structure like at the Indigenous Justice Center?
Thank you. And if I could just to clarify a question, when you speak about cost, are you referring to the cost of doing business or the cost of engaging a lawyer for the client? I'm sorry, I just didn't quite understand.
The cost of engaging a lawyer, I think.
Okay, yes, definitely. We do have a means test that we do ask our clients to provide us some information regarding, but one of the other benefits of the center is that we are able to provide a somewhat more generous allowance and understanding of what an appropriate family income would be for somebody who would require a little bit of extra help with legal services. So we do stress people to simply, if they identify that they have an issue that's relating to family or criminal justice, and they are not in a position to seek to hire a lawyer themselves, we encourage them to come speak to us, because we may find we're in a position where we are able to help them when their income could possibly put them a little bit over the coverage for other existing services.
And I want to circle back. I'm interested to hear a little more about, you mentioned some of the services available diverting people away from the criminal justice system when they do have those encounters, those police-involved encounters.
Right.
What does that look like in kind of a practical sense? What are some of the avenues towards that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Let me make sure I understand that fully. So if we're looking at what sort of interventions that I and the center can make to help divert people away from further involvement in the criminal justice system, is that sort of what you're asking?
Yeah, exactly. I interviewed someone from the Urban Aboriginal Justice Society last week who spoke about that as kind of a priority for their organization, and I know there's a partnership there as well.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. Well, we do operate in a milieu where there are a number of coalition partners who are essential for different aspects of culturally appropriate service. But I would say, in terms of the question of what sort of interventions we're able to provide that are unique to the center, I would suggest that in that milieu, what distinguishes the Indigenous Justice Center and our ability to help divert people away from negative involvement in the criminal justice system is that, as I was saying, we are able to start our intervention as soon as something becomes a need for a client, and we don't have to engage with clients who have already been through the system to an extent. And it's a kind of a subtle point, but I guess what I would, I guess the example that I would give is that some of the interventions to try to help turn around the overrepresentation of Indigenous people in both the correction system and in the youth Ministry of Children and Families ward system, is that the interventions would sometimes by necessity come after the person had already had their court experience. Mm-hmm. One of the interventions that's been made as a result of a lot of hard work by people who really care to try to fix these issues over 20 years is the GLADU provisions of the criminal code. And before I would go any further, I would ask if you're familiar with those, or if you think your audience might be familiar with those, I can just give a little brief kind of aside on it. So the GLADU provisions already provide in the criminal code that once a person's been convicted, that if a person is of Indigenous identity and if they have experienced historical and generational dislocation, that the judge has to consider all other options besides incarceration in sentencing, no matter what their background is. And that is a great service. And the GLADU courts and the First Nations Justice Courts that are in some ways enabled by that provision are a great intervention. But the difference is when people come before a GLADU court, they've already either been convicted or have pled guilty. And the interventions that can be made at that point to try to help somebody are somewhat limited in their scope by the fact that that person, by definition, now already has a record of conviction.
Mm-hmm.
And in our case, we're able to start from that first point of contact with the system and to do what we can to vigorously defend the rights of our individual clients within that system. And in some ways, it may be a little bit of an oversimplification to say, but I think I would describe it as it's easier to get somebody out of the system before they've been fully brought into the system.
Mm-hmm.
And just due to the nature of the administrative procedures of referral to some interventions that occurred before and that occur through other stakeholders, through other coalition partners, we're still in a situation where, despite all of this great work, that the levels of representation of Indigenous people in the correctional system and in the child welfare system are, for the most part, as high, if not higher, than they were 20 or 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. When some of these other interventions began. So it's not to say that those other interventions aren't also a critical part of the overall strategy, but the piece that we can provide is different than what's come before. The other important distinction I would make between what we can provide and what other existing services for Indigenous justice and advocacy is that we have people like myself who are lawyers, who are called to the bar, who have certain privileges and responsibilities that are unique to the profession. And the kind of assistance that I can provide is fundamentally different in that way from the kind of assistance that can be provided by agencies that have people who are advocates or mm-hmm. who are social workers, who are who are elders and experts and knowledge keepers, but may not necessarily have that legal training. And I don't want to overemphasize the importance of the law school part of it, but I think the example I would give, one of the things that I can do that somebody who's not a lawyer can't do in trying to intervene and to resolve a case before it gets into the court system is to have privileged negotiations with Crown Counsel, to have conversations that can be made without prejudice. And not to get too into the technical weeds of it, but it's the nature of my oath to the court and being recognized as an officer of the court that allows me to do that. And that, I think, is one of the reasons why even people within the justice system, whether they're Crown Counsel, whether they're members of the RCMP, or anyone else with some responsibility like that, they may want to find creative solutions. They may want to try to divert people from the system when they can, but they may not be able to speak frankly or to have the level of negotiation that is possible with somebody who is called to the bar, like I am, or the other lawyers from the center are. So I guess what I would say the effect of that is that I'm able to get out ahead of some issues, I think, in a way that other actors who may not necessarily have that title of a lawyer may have more of a challenge in doing.
Yeah, that's really interesting. To hear kind of the constraints around other people's roles, but also how they complement each other in the broader scheme of things.
Totally.
So, Liam, to wrap up, maybe could you give us a little information on how people can access your services or find out a little bit more about what the Indigenous Justice Centers across the province are doing?
Yes, very much so. We do have a comprehensive website that does provide links to the justice centers. It provides a lot of additional information about the justice strategy and some of the issues in history that we've been discussing here. That can be found just at www.bcfnjc.com. Additionally, if people would like to contact me directly, if they think that they may have a legal issue we could be of help with, or if they just have an informational question, they can call my direct line during regular business hours. It's 250-561-6471. If I'm not able to pick that up because I'm in court, it will transfer to my assistant. Her name is Pam, and Pam will be happy to schedule anyone in who needs to see me. We do have still our physical office, and it is located on the first floor of 1268 Fifth Avenue. The staffing of the Indigenous Justice Center right now due to COVID means that we may or may not have a member of the IJC on site. But between the hours of 8 a.m. and 4 p.m., staff of the Prince George Urban Aboriginal Justice Society will be present in the building. And if people don't have access to a phone or internet, or if there's an urgent situation that they just want to come speak to somebody about right away, I would encourage them to still come into the center. And if we're not there, someone from PGUHAS can put them in touch with us quickly.
That's great. Liam Cooper, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was my pleasure. And thank you much for your interest, Kate. And I hope that we will be able to speak more with you in the future.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
Excellent. Thanks again. Have a good day.